we're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The Creative Entrepreneur, making and selling physical goods. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business.
Hey, friends, and welcome back to Proof to Product. I'm your host, Katie Hunt. Today on the show, we have Jen Palacio, the owner of Tiny Turns Papery, a brick and mortar shop located in Somerville, Massachusetts. Jen opened her stationery and gift shop in April 2019, and her focus since then has been to support independent artists and makers and to provide her customers and community with unique products. In addition to running her shop, Jen also teaches courses in the sustainability program at the Harvard Extension School. On today's episode, we're talking about misconceptions people have about opening and running a brick and mortar store. We talk about how Jen intentionally set personal boundaries when she opened her shop and shifts that she had to make when COVID hit. Jen and I also talked about how she wished she had prioritized hiring a team sooner rather than later, and she talked about what her team looks like now. Before we jump into this episode, I wanted to share what we've been up to inside of our Proof to Product Labs community lately. Last month, I held a training on discontinuing product, including how to decide what you should discontinue and then how to communicate product line changes with your customer. This month, we're tackling SEO strategies, and next month, we're focused on learning how to batch create our social media content. To complement our live trainings each month, we also host Power Hours, and this is where members come together and co-work, basically implementing all of the things that we learned that month. So it's a dedicated block of time to take action on all of the things we learned. We don't want you sitting in on these trainings and filing it away for something to do on your to-do list later. If you would like access to these trainings, head to prooftoproduct.com/labs to join the waitlist for my 12-month group coaching program. All right, let's dive in. Hey, Jen, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm so excited. This is actually the first time we're meeting, although I feel like our paths have crossed so many different times through people we know and mutual contacts in the industry. And I'm just so grateful that they've connected us now so that we can have this conversation. And you're also going to participate in our upcoming Paper Camp program as a speaker, which I'm thrilled for. So thank you again for just sharing your time and your talents and your insight with us here today.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here. I've been listening to the podcast for a while. And yeah, I do feel like it's weird that we don't already know each other.
I know, right? So the industry is so big, but so small all at the same time. So, well, before we started recording, you had shared with me that you never intended to open a brick and mortar shop. And I would love for you to share what led you to opening Tiny Turns Papery, which is your brick and mortar store in Somerville, Massachusetts. Do you mind giving us the backstory there?
Yeah, sure. So much like many of the people in the paper industry, I started off just making stationery because I loved it. And so I was doing kind of the making it for my friends. I had a full-time career job sort of thing. And I ended up ending that and going to grad school. And during that time, I worked for a small independent retail store in Somerville, Massachusetts called Davis Squared. And while I loved working there, it made me think like, wow, I never really want to do this. It's like just all the different pieces that were involved and I learned from it were great, but it just didn't seem like where I wanted to go with my art and how to do what I really loved, which was make cool stationery that helped people connect. And I guess what ended up happening is I started doing all of the pop-up markets, craft markets and things like that, and meeting a bunch of other great makers. I met Janine from Crotations through Davis Squared, and I started a letterpress studio. And so I thought I was just going to be kind of on that end of it, just producing and making things. And through a couple of different events that happened, I was able to realize that it ended up being a lot of the relationships that I was making that were much more important to me. And so it was just by happenstance that the brick and mortar happened. I started doing more community events, and I thought that was the route that I was going to go. Janine and I actually did a couple of like long-term, like three-walled sheds in the winter kind of things, like those Christmas markets. And so it gave me a lot of insight as to what parts of sort of the stationery business I really enjoyed, and working with other artists ended up being a little bit more important to me than making my own greeting card line. And I found that through my letterpress studio, I liked making kind of the more conceptual art, which is not really where you can make money in the industry, but it's super fun and I think really important. So I started to think about how can I marry these two things a little bit better. And so I started doing a few of those longer term pop-ups. I ended up working for a really great stationery shop that was in Bow Market before I was there. And I think a lot of our mutual friends know Calliope Papery, which is out in Natick. So she had me come in as just her Thursday girl, because I was trying to figure out how do I get some stability in this kind of art focused world, but have a little bit more structure to it. And when she ended up deciding to consolidate back into one store, I had a relationship already with the people that own Bow Market. And I was like, hey, people need a local stationery store. So what if I did this here? And so it was not an intentional path at all. It just ended up organically happening. And I'm really glad that it did.
I love that you seized the opportunity and that you saw there's a need for this in the market. Obviously, the store was doing well here. Like, let's see this through further. And also the community and relationships that you talked about there. Did you intend for it to be more of a community space where you would teach classes and have people come and rent time on the letterpress? Or did you know that you wanted it to be more customer facing, retail, traditional brick and mortar?
I was, and still am, really open to all the possibilities and potential of it. So for sure, I was a little bit more drawn to something that was more interactive than just a retail storefront. Like, I was thinking about, we've had some fun experiences having people come and like print their own wedding invitations or print posters for protests and things like that in our letterpress studio. And trying to marry the two is something that's always been of interest to me. And then with COVID, a lot of that got put on hold.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about COVID in a few minutes, but let's actually rewind a bit. What types of products do you carry in your store and who's your core customer? Who are the people that come to shop with you?
So that the core customer and the people that come to shop with me has evolved a lot over time. So originally, and when I say evolved a lot over time, I've only been open since 2019. So it's evolved a lot very quickly.
Very quickly. You've had to adapt to many different types of customers.
You know, originally it was, is definitely people that love stationery. Greeting cards are 100% my number one. 80% of my sales are people looking for unique ways to connect with folks and in the kind of this analog way that we all love. But I also carry everything that's kind of adjacent to that. So anything that is related to writing or journaling, a lot of the fun things like washi tape and all the little Afirma for like keeping things organized, like paper clips and fun stickers. So stickers are going crazy right now. They're
everywhere, right?
Yeah, they are very close second to greeting cards for me at the moment. But the other thing that's been really fun that I didn't carry when I opened and I didn't think that I was going to carry were kind of like home accessories. So candles have been super popular and things like tea towels. So I would say that at least for me, because I'm a printmaker, it kind of started off with things that are printed on paper and then all of the kind of little tendrils and avenues that you can get from there. So there have been some really cool poster artists that are started putting their stuff into greeting card form or into tea towel form or like on cool sort of everyday items, but with like a screen printed image on it. So like in terms of design and packaging and that sort of thing.
That's cool. So, you know, there's a lot of people in our community that are like, I want to open a brick and mortar store. Like this is one of their dreams. And it's a lot of hard work, right, Jen? And So what is a misconception that you would think or that you see that most people have about opening and running a brick and mortar shop?
So I think a misconception, and this has happened with a bunch of people, including myself, is that you can run a brick and mortar in order to give yourself a great outlet for your own work. And it's really hard to be a maker and a and run a brick and mortar at the same time. And so I very quickly, like my original formula was like, okay, I'll have like maybe 25% of the stuff in the store is going to be all stuff that I make, even if it's like manufactured by somebody else, but it'll be my design stuff. And the other 75% will be other artists that I love. And that's like really great in theory, but in practice, like I ended up putting my handmade business on hold for, I only just recently started bringing it back, like within the last couple of months. And the first year of that had nothing to do with the craziness that's happened in the world. It 100% had to do with what it takes to have a store run. And the thing is, I knew this because I worked for a small independent retailer. And
right. You had the experience.
Yeah. It wasn't that the reason why I had said when I stopped working for them, because I worked for them while I was in grad school, wasn't because I didn't love the store or the products or the customers or any of the things like that. I was like, oh, this is your whole life. Like this is 100% your whole life. And I know and respect and admire a bunch of people who do it all on their own or within their family. But I think the number one thing I took away from it is that as soon as I could possibly afford help, and even when I felt like I maybe couldn't, I should have done it.
You should have hired help.
Yeah, I should have hired like real, I always had like friends that were helping out or like part-time, like, so, cause I knew logically I can't work 7 days a week. I need like a couple days off.
Right.
But real actual employee, like assistant, whatever you want to call it, somebody who's going to take on some portion of the actual like strategic running of the thing is really what it takes to make it both mentally and emotionally possible to survive and grow and be flexible in those sort of things. And I say that as somebody who didn't, I tried to do most everything myself for almost the first year, for at least the first like 8 or 9 months. The only help I had was like literally a body to run sales on days when I couldn't physically be in the store. And I wish I hadn't waited so long to do that.
I am so glad you brought this up because I think this is true for brick and mortar shop owners. I think this is true for manufacturers. I think this is true for anyone running a business. I think it's human nature to think, okay, I can juggle this all on my own, or I can manage these pieces. But I think we underestimate the amount of actual work that has to get done, as well as the emotional, mental, that additional layer of labor, the mental labor that we do. So hearing you say that, you know, you wish you had hired sooner, and once you did, it sounds like it really helped you. I felt the same way in my business. As soon as I started hiring people to implement the strategies we'd already put into place, or like started the framework of, but hadn't gotten to because we just didn't have enough hours in the day, my business skyrocketed and it became much more of a, and I wonder if you felt the same way, like I was able to focus on the things that mattered most for the business, but I also started to get my life back a little bit. I wasn't working nights and weekends and all the, you know, every waking hour of the day, it seemed. What about you? Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I definitely feel like it brought a level of sanity that I didn't really know that I needed. So the other thing I decided to do when I opened the store, which not everybody has the luxury to do, and I know is difficult, was that I wasn't gonna go into any kind of debt to make it work. So I felt like I had enough like experience with 10 years of doing like the handmade stuff and then working for a couple of different small retailers to have an idea of how much it would cost. So I set like, this is what I'm going to allow from our personal life. I obviously had a lot of conversations with my husband and I'm like, this is the amount and we're not going to go below this amount. And we're going to like build the right kind of triggers in place so that if we feel like it's in danger, then I'll have an out. So I had a very short term lease compared to a lot of folks. And that was also, you know, testament to what the folks that own the building that I'm in were trying to do is give people like us a shot. But what that meant is to pay for my life, I had to keep my other part-time jobs. So I was also teaching night school for some local colleges and also still trying to fulfill like a couple of custom orders here and there and figure out how to, so I was really working like 3 jobs and the store was more of a full-time job than I realized. Cause I was sort of thinking, okay, I'll be open Wednesday through Sunday, like I'll have Monday and Tuesday to do my other things. And, and it'll all work out great, right?
And it makes sense on paper and it makes sense in our head. Yeah. But then in practice, we're like, what did we do to ourselves?
Why? Like, I'm not sleeping. This is not working.
This is not sustainable. Yeah. Yes.
And I think the other thing that helped is the other deal that I made with my husband is that we wouldn't put any of our big life plans on hold just because I wanted to try this thing. So we had already penciled in a trip to Japan for 2 weeks. And I'm like, that's going to be like a little bit of research because there's a lot of great stationery stuff out there, but also what we're going to do. And so that means I opened in April. I was like, I have until August to figure out whether or not the shop will just be closed for 2 weeks or if I'll find some people to help me bridge that gap. And so having to make those kind of like, I don't know what you call them, but kind of like cut and dry decisions, like these are what I'm not willing to give up at all, I think was another.
They're boundaries, yeah. Jen. Boundaries. They're boundaries. You said, boundaries. You said boundaries, yeah. Which all of us need in our life. I love it. It's great to think about them and say, this is what I'd want to do, but to actually hold those boundaries and hold yourself accountable to it, it can be tough. So the fact that you like set out to have this debt-free business and to make the business kind of pay for itself and to hold the space for you guys to take this trip, I think that's phenomenal. You know, what does your team look like now? How many team members do you have for the shop?
So I have a full-time manager, shop assistant, and two part-time employees. The second part-time employee is like, both of the part-time employees have only been on for maybe a couple months. The most recent one just finished training. And we may pick up one more person to like keep scheduling balanced and help with like potential starting to think about future projects. But I think it's because, you know, it's August now and the holidays are coming up and I don't want to be training someone during like the peak season. So I'm hoping that the people that are on the team now will at least stay through the end of the year, because that will make everything a lot easier.
Oh, so much easier. A couple of my coaching clients have brick and mortar shops and we've already been talking about, you know, staffing up for the expected holiday season and what that's going to look like. But it's tough too, because you want some flexibility too. You don't want to have like a full team if you're not going to need that, but you don't want to have people just on call either. So
yeah. And it's been interesting to try to figure out how to balance that, because I want to be able to be somebody that people can rely on if they need the hours on a regular basis. But I also like the downside of the kinds of boundaries that I set is the one that I did not set was to pay myself. So I'm not actually paying myself yet, which is not...
Jen, we're going to have a conversation off the air about this.
Which isn't to say that I am... I just don't have it as set as I would like it to be. Like, so yeah, I haven't been able to let go of the part-time extra work in the way that I wanted to. So if everything had gone according to plan, which nothing ever does, I would be teaching one less class this fall. And so the idea was to like slowly replace my other sources of income with income from the store. And yeah, if I'm being really honest, it might be just a little bit of a fear of pulling the trigger on that boundary more than not being able to do it. But I think it's also just because the last year has been more than anything.
Well, I can relate to that. I mean, I had overlap with my day job and my stationery brand, Kelp Designs, and Proof to Product. Well, with my stationery brand and my day job, I had overlap of 4 years before I made the jump to go full time. And I started Proof to Product about a year before, just over a year and a half before I went full time. And I will tell you, I've had this conversation with a lot of different people, and there never feels like a necessarily right time, or you never feel as financially secure or as time secure, or like all of the different fears and worries we have. So to some extent, we do have to make the leap and like do our best to make everything work out. But to your point, nothing ever works exactly as planned. So I think you need to do what's comfortable for you in that process. You mentioned already that you opened your doors April of 2019, you know, and COVID hit before you even had your 1 year business birthday there. What types of shifts did you have to make during COVID amidst closures and, you know, all the other things that were going on?
Yeah. So I live in a pretty health conscious, I guess is the best way to say it, city. And I think they made a lot of really great choices. And I I appreciate that they put like the safety, we're a really dense city of the population first and foremost. So when the closures came, they came real fast and they were much like everywhere else, kind of unexpected. But one of the fun things about where I am is that we're able to organize and host events. And so I had sort of started doing this annual book fair event at Bow Market. And we had that event on like the first weekend of March. And then 5 days later, everything started rolling in the shutdowns. We had to be closed completely. And at the time, my store was 163 square feet. So you can't 6 foot distance in 163 square feet.
Right.
And I didn't have a website. And I didn't yet, like, Katie was very, she's my shop manager, was very, very part-time at the time. I think she was working for me maybe 10 hours a week. And she was looking for a full-time job and everything kind of went on pause. So I didn't have a website, so I didn't have a way to make sales. We couldn't have people in person. Katie and I couldn't even be in the shop to do things together at the same time. So it was a real hard left turn. And I had always intended on having some sort of like online shop for the business. It just, you know, in the first year, apparently kept pushing away. And so as we saw that the closure was going to be more than 2 weeks, we like started off with, okay, we're going to use this 2 weeks to do inventory. We'll just trade off days that we're there and like figure out how to like get everything in good order to start getting things on a website. And then with things staying closed, then eventually it like made the call. I was like, look, I don't know what's better for you. If it's better for you to like just be fully unemployed and like get whatever benefit we may or may not get, because we didn't know at the time, there were still not any of the benefits or any of the relief packages. I was like, and I was really probably more straightforward than most people would be with an employee. I was like, this is how much money we have. I'm willing to say, pay you for however many hours that goes until either something good happens or we run out of money. And then we have to make very different decisions and figure out what's going on overall for the fate of the store. What ended up happening in that interim, and I'm really glad I did it, is she figured out our inventory system. We got a website up. So I stayed at home. She lives like a couple blocks from the store. So it's like, this is now your office to keep everybody safe. Since we don't know how to like handle this situation, I will not enter the store while you're in it. So if you need me to do something, I'll come after like your shifts or before and drop things off for you. Otherwise, we did everything on FaceTime and we got a website up for pickup. And I drove around in my little Subaru and dropped off local like orders that people had coming through. We tried a bunch of crazy things with some of our neighbor retailers where we would have like a story sale and then people could come pick up their orders, or, you know, we'd send them invoices and I'd deliver them. So we basically just did whatever we could. And then once the government and city benefits started rolling in, I spent a lot of my days filling out grant applications. It just felt like I was just doing paperwork like crazy. And fortunately, the upside of being in the kind of city I am, one of the benefits that we ended up qualifying for, actually the only benefit, because since I'm married and my husband has a career, like the store itself didn't qualify for anything. But because we were creating a job and supporting that, I was able to qualify for a grant that allowed me to hire Katie full time and pay for that. And that got us through the gap, because we were closed to the public from, I want to say it was like March 15th or even earlier, until June 26th. So no people, no nothing, and we probably got the website up just a little bit after our store anniversary, so end of April.
Okay, that's still pretty quick, Jen. Like, to put a site together with all the inventory, that's impressive.
It wasn't perfect, but
they never are. Let's be honest, they're always a work in progress.
It worked. Like, it took orders. We were able to get people things that they wanted. We live in a very supportive community, so that helped. And it really just for me helped me mentally frame what I didn't realize was actually important to me in the store, and like in having a store and being part of a community and selecting the people and brands that we select to have in the store. It really ended up being a good learning I wish it didn't have to happen the way it did, but it ended up like really coalescing a lot of like the priorities. If you had asked me when I opened the store, what like our mission statement was, and like now how that's different, it's the priorities are quite different.
Yeah. I have to imagine too, that it really strengthened your relationship with Katie, and the fact too, that you were so transparent with details with her, even financial details, and then also getting that grant to be able to employ her full time. I'm sure that that has breeded a lot of loyalty on her part to you too. The fact that you did prioritize her and it wasn't just a cut everyone, cut every expense, cut, you know, I mean, that's what some people did because they were coming from a place of fear and not like a place of how can we make this work. But I have to say, like, it's super impressive and it shows that you're a good leader and a good, I don't want to say boss, but like you're a good leader of the business. And it sounds to me that I would assume that it's really strengthened your relationship with her and her loyalty to your business. Do you feel that's true? Or
I hope so. Like and one of the ways it reframed things was thinking about like, so being on the other end of it, having worked in small retail, I just assumed it was something that I did because I enjoyed it and I liked being around the stuff. And I loved working for the people that I worked for, but I always knew it was theirs, very much theirs, not mine. And I think it's important to me for Katie to feel like that this is, that she's a part of this and that it doesn't have to be like an interim to something where she's gonna, like, we now have the ability to have the kinds of conversations with like, I would love for you to be able to grow with the business in the ways that you might want to, because she's also a letterer. She's also an artist. We were able to figure out how to like help her, kind of coach her through figuring out how to do things like product design and actually like get something manufactured. So I had tote bags in my previous life that I've done. And I was like, you know, what would be great is for our anniversary, while we have this time while we're sitting around, is to design a tote bag release for our second anniversary, since we missed our first anniversary. And so like being able to like work with her through that and kind of like get the experience of like, okay, well, what's it like when I have to let go and not do all of the illustration?
Yes.
And how is it going to be to have like a shared vision? And maybe that means we have end up being able to have a Tiny Turns line where like some of the products like will be profit shared or like whatever different ways she wants to test it out in a safe manner for what she wants to do. And hopefully other people want to do that as well. Cause both of the part-time people that work for me, one is actually a longtime friend that I've done letterpress with for years. She's also trying to like move a little bit from hobby to more of a brand line. And our most recent hire is also an illustrator and designer. And she has her own stationery line that she's been working on independently. So it's been kind of nice to be able to feel like it's not just going to be, it can be for the people. We can,
you're like an incubator.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah. Like a little, I always wanted there to be a community aspect from it. I just didn't think that it would be in like kind of the employment like portion of it.
Yeah. Most of the time we think of the community aspect in terms of our customers or the people we're serving. Whereas this is your team as part of this community. Like it's a sub community. That's awesome. What's your favorite part of owning your brick and mortar shop?
My favorite part is seeing all the cool things other people make. And so I'll often like laugh when I see a card that somebody just released and I'm like, oh, I gotta get that right away for the store. And then I get to laugh again when somebody else buys it and or is looking at it and laughing. And I love that aspect of it, feeling like seeing a little bit more of the different ways that people are connected to their art. And also when like I buy something and I get an email from the owner of a brand who's like, I'm just so glad that you like that. I was worried it wasn't good, or I was like having a bad day. And I'm like, hey, you know, and I know a lot of the people that I work with listen to this podcast. So I'm just going to put it out there. If you're feeling like you're having a bad day, send me an Instagram message or an email. I will tell you how many compliments that you've gotten that week, because we get them all the time on very specific items. It's not just like, oh, your store's so cute, you have a lot of stuff. I mean, I love hearing that too, but I love like when somebody says like, this scent from the Card Bureau's candle makes me feel good every time I smell it. So I hope you never run out of stock, because I know that it's going to make my day every time I light it. Like I will call me. I will tell you all the cool things that people say about yourself.
I love hearing that. I will tell you, one of the things I've been hearing feedback from the manufacturers I work with the last year and a half, with trade shows not really happening, although we're starting to open those up again, right? But craft shows too, like manufacturers haven't had that direct contact with their customers. So they haven't been standing at a craft show and seeing people pick up their product and laugh, or pick up their product and turn to the people they're with and say, oh my gosh, you have to see this. Like, and I will tell you, from a creative, and you know, you're yeah. creative, from a creative standpoint though, we need that interaction with our customers. And we need to know that the things we're dreaming up in our heads actually are what people want to hear or resonate with people. And so thank you for sharing that, because I know all of us have felt so isolated for the last 18 months. And yes, we're selling things online, and yes, we're hearing things from people through the computer, but it's very different when you have that face-to-face response, or you see the reactions that you're seeing in your shop. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah. I mean, it's you're right. That kind of like immediate, like human response it was the thing that was probably missing the most when we were closed. But I will say that, like, yeah, I love the brands that I work with. Everybody is doing such great stuff. It's inspiring to me. Like, I don't know that I would feel like I would want to make any kind of art if I wasn't doing this, because it just, you know, all the energy gets kind of, it's hard to rebuild it. And when you're surrounded by cool things that people are trying to make, like, that's, for me, the ranking is like, keep my employees like feeling good and getting what they need, and then paying the artists. Like, if it weren't for all the small brands, like, I don't think I would have made it, because I think that there's not a way for me to make my store look as unique or accessible to people without the stuff that people are making. So we're only as good as the artists that we carry.
On that note, thank you for sharing that. What's next for you? What do you have coming up that you want to share with our audience? And, you know, what are you excited about?
I'm excited about the holiday season. I'm feeling pretty optimistic about it. I think people want to feel good. And I'm really excited about some of the things that I've been seeing people previewing and letting go out there. I'm excited for bringing back community events. I don't know what that's going to be like. So it's hard to say that we definitely have anything in the works, but I'm hoping that maybe next year things like workshops or like meet the maker kind of things that I've always wanted to do can come back in an in-person kind of way. I'm excited about being on Paper Camp and talking to people.
We are excited to have you. And that whole interview is going to be very different. We're going to get deep yeah. into the weeds of what do you want to see from manufacturers? How do you want to be pitched? What kind of follow-up annoys you? All those things are where we're going with that. But yeah, there's a lot of exciting things, I think, too, to your point of community and where you're located too is such a huge piece of what you do. So I can see all these live events really bolstering what you're already doing in a lot of ways. So I think it's interesting to me, and this is kind of a side tangent, you know, some places are really open, some places are not very open. And I think it's important too that all of, meaning open for yeah. events, larger events, conferences, trade shows, smaller events too. And I think it's just super important that all of us kind of do what feels comfortable and right for us at the time. So
I 100% agree. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that maybe comes a little bit more naturally to some than others is being really flexible, but we've all been forced to have to be really flexible. And so that's why, like, I would love to be able to say, I'm planning this thing for Small Business Saturday, because that was the other big event that I always, even before I had a brick and mortar, I was always involved with it in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we're going to do something, but like, I don't know what it's going to be. Like, it's going to depend on like what the community thinks is safe. Well, like people are, well, I never want to have the people that I partner with have to invest in something that they're not sure they're going to get a return on. So that's something that I'm kind of constantly trying to keep in mind, is like, I don't want to waste anybody's time. And if we can figure out what's the best way to like keep that sense of community going, but also not pull people's energy. Like we said, with like boundaries, like there's only so much you have to dedicate. And I really want to make sure that if you're working with me, it's going to pay off.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. And to comfort level, I want everyone to be comfortable in whatever setting we're in too. So awesome. Well, where can people find you online to shop your new website, new-ish website, and also to connect with you on social media?
Yeah. So I am Tiny Turns Papery and all of the things. So tinyturnspapery.com is our website, Tiny Turns Papery on Instagram and Facebook. Yeah. I'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. We will include those in the show notes, of course, for anyone that's looking to find you. And Jen, just thank you for your time and thank you for this insight. I think there's a lot that you all do as brick and mortar shop owners that is unseen work, right? And so for you to come and share what it's been like having a team and growing a team and things, you know, what it was like through COVID, I very much appreciate you kind of shedding some extra light on the challenges you've been facing as you've grown this arm of your business.
Thank you. It was really great talking with you.
You as well. All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Jen Palacio as much as I did. A key takeaway that resonated with me is what Jen said about hiring. We both wish that we had hired help in our businesses sooner than we did. So even if you don't feel ready to add team members to the mix, I want you to start daydreaming about what your team could look like. Think about what tasks and roles you would want to delegate, what responsibilities and outcomes would each of these team members be responsible for, and even think about the order in which you'd prioritize the different roles. Which ones would you hire for first if you had the opportunity? And if you need help figuring out what you should be delegating, please be sure to check out my free masterclass called Deciding What to Delegate in 3 Simple Steps. You can sign up at proof2product.com/delegate, and I'll show you how to stop being a bottleneck in your business. All right, friends, have a great week, and I'll be back next week with a new episode. Can't wait for you to hear it.